Hi there. Welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sands of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. All sorts of great things this week. I say that every week, but I find good things every time. And it includes information about the Emmy nominations that just came out. But first, let's start with one of my favorite articles, The Must List. I Know What You Did Last Summer, The Summer I Turned Pretty, and Heathers, the musical, top Entertainment Weekly's must list. A new season of TCM's The Plot Thickens, and a Blu-ray re-release of the 1969 British film The Assassination Bureau round out our staff picks for the weekend. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. We are unapologetic Jensen Ackles stans here at Entertainment Weekly, so we're particularly thrilled with our latest cover story from on set of his new series. Speaking of countdowns, our entire team is frantically packing for our pop culture Super Bowl San Diego Comic-Con. So, warning, next week's newsletter will be written on maybe 2 hours of sleep. Countdown, Patrick Gomez, Editor-in-Chief. First on our list, I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's another summer in Southport, North Carolina, and a new group of friends are being slashed and slayed one by one in eerily similar fashion to the iconic 90s teen slasher I Know What You Did Last Summer, and enlist the help of 1997 massacre survivors Julie James, played by Jennifer Love Hewitt, and Ray Bronson, played by Freddie Prinze Jr. With a fresh lens and lots of humor, the reboot's director, Jennifer Caton Robinson, and co-writer Sam Lansky's script had me hooked. Well, what are you waiting for? The Summer I Turned Pretty. In season two of Prime Video's young adult hit, Belly, played by Lola Tung, chose the curly-haired Jeremiah, played by Gavin Casalingo, over his floppy-haired older brother, Cam, played by Christopher Briney. But like the waves at Cousins Beach, this third and final season reveals heartbreaking secrets, setting up one final brotherly tug-of-war over Belly's heart. The plot thickens. TCM's podcast returns for a sixth season that hits close to home for host Ben Mankiewicz, exploring the sensationalized making of his uncle Joseph Mankiewicz's film 1963's Cleopatra, from the Liz Taylor-Richard Burton love affair that scandalized the world to a constantly ballooning budget. Heathers, the musical. The dark 1988 comedy starring Winona Ryder and Christian Slater is a frenetic delight in musical form. NYC's New World Stage's revival stars an outstanding Mackenzie Kurtz as evil queen bee Heather Chandler, who loves torturing Lorna Courtney's Veronica, even from beyond the grave. The Assassination Bureau. Specialty distributor Arrow Video digs up another underappreciated gem of British cinema with a Blu-ray re-release of this 1969 film. Based on an unfinished Jack London novel, this swinging pre-World War I caper pairs swaggering Oliver Reed with fierce feminist Diana Rigg for stylish 60s thrills. That was our must list. I Know What You Did Last Summer, The Summer I Turned Pretty, and Heathers, the musical, top their must list. And it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. So speaking of What I Know You Did Last Summer, here is their review. Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. passed the hook to the next generation. Clever moments and a sensational performance from Madeline Klein keep the movie mostly alive. This is by Jordan Hoffman. Nostalgia's overrated, Jennifer Love Hewitt's Julie James says during the final showdown in the new I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is a pretty gutsy line, all things considered. Here's a movie that absolutely wouldn't exist if it couldn't cash in on its 90s cachet. Similarly, pushing it is the name of the production company, which gets its own title card, Original Film. But since a profitable horror franchise, much like a horror villain, can never truly die, here we are once again in Southport, North Carolina, getting chased by a lunatic in a black rain slicker with a fishing hook. This version, which qualifies as a legacy qual, once again gets a group of not super bright kids out on the road inadvertently causing an innocent person to die. After agreeing to cover it up, their actions come back to haunt them, literally, in the guise of a crazed ichthyological killer. Our central character this time is Ava, played by Chase Sui Wonders, who is returning to Southport because her best pal from high school, Danica, played by Madeline Klein, is throwing an engagement party. She's shacked up with Teddy, played by Tyreek Withers, whose father, Grant, played by Billy Spencer, is a rich real estate developer who has transformed the coastal town into the Hamptons of the South. Also in the mix is Ava's ex-boyfriend Milo, played by Jonah Howard King, and their old pal Stevie, played by Sarah Pigeon, a working-class girl amidst all this wealth who is newly out the other side of a rough patch. Later, we'll meet Wyatt, played by Joshua Orpin, a hulking piece of beefcake dispatched via harpoon, and Tyler, played by Gabriette, a true crime podcaster noting the locale's gentrification, who has a steamy tryst with Ava in the Wilmington Airport's ladies' room, one of a handful of surprisingly randy scenes in what threatens periodically to be a by-the-numbers film. A year after the first vehicular death, which is mostly that dunce Teddy's fault, though you do eventually grow to like him, Danica is the first one to receive a note. "I know what you did last summer," it says, forcing the group to panic, especially when people in their orbit start ending up dead. In time, Ava decides to seek counsel from the elders, Julie James, who has survived not one but two theatrically released "I Know What You Did Last Summer" movies, surely must have some advice. She teaches at a nearby college, lecturing students about the ramifications of trauma while wearing a Cure Disintegration t-shirt. Once Ava explains that a maniac is turning her friends into chum, Julie has but one question. "What did you do last summer?" By this point in the movie, it's already been evident that director Jennifer Caton Robinson is not content to just go through the motions. This is a movie that hits all the necessary beats, but also has its tongue firmly in place. Robinson co-wrote the screenplay with journalist Sam Lansky, who reportedly ghostwrote Britney Spears' memoir, and everything about this screams, "Yes, we are well aware this is stupid, but let's try to have some fun here." Robinson previously directed the Netflix high school drama Do Revenge, which had a similar look and feel, lavish houses, elaborate costuming that toggles between salacious and preppy, and a surprising punch to the dialogue. In this regard, I Know What You Did Last Summer is an auteurist work, which is something that could not be said about the original. Though she isn't the protagonist, Madeline Klein's character is far and away the best thing here. Also quite good is Freddie Prinze Jr., whom we discover is the boss and mentor to the nice gal Stevie, who never should have gotten mixed up with these rich kids. Klein was a breakout in Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, and is unquestionably destined for a major career. Apart from her stunning looks, she is genuinely hilarious as the snotty but lovable Danica. She has a terrific horror movie scream, and during the one or two moments in which the film requires some bona fide dramatic acting out of her, she nails it. So the good news is that there's a lot that's enjoyable here. The bad news is that this movie is preposterously dumb. time and again, stuff just kind of happens. Why are there mannequins upstairs at a closed seafood bar? Why is there a parade float in the shed at a cemetery? Who cares? It looks cool. The character motivation is similarly shoddy, and nobody acts like they've seen a horror movie before. I was also pretty baffled by the ending. Sure, I got it in broad strokes, but I believe that if you stop and scrutinize the contours of this motion picture, you will discover that it doesn't quite snap together like a jigsaw puzzle. Shocking, I'm sure. Finally, it must be said that Jennifer Love Hewitt, alas, is just not vibrating on the same frequency as Madeline Klein and the rest of the cast. She seems somehow out of phase with the tone of the movie. The truth of the matter is that when she comes on the screen, which isn't too much, but it isn't just a scene or two, she shuts the momentum down. Nevertheless, for young people looking for something to do besides doom-scrolling, you could do far worse. For those old enough to have seen the first one in theaters, this'll be a decent one to stream later in the year. That was their review of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. pass the hook to the next generation. It was by Jordan Hoffman, who's giving the movie a grade of B-. Like I said, the 2025 Emmy nominations are out. I have the list that I'll start to describe at the end of the show, but I wanted to get in the snubs and surprises from the nominations. Voters got a lot right, but not everything. This is by Kristen Baldwin. Hello, and welcome to our annual celebration of Emmy voters and their infinite wisdom, as well as our annual airing of grievances about Emmy voters and their upsetting lack of attention to deserving shows and performers. Here are our picks for the most joyful surprises and most egregious snubs. And don't forget to add your own in the comments section. In the surprises category, we have Jake Gyllenhaal for Presumed Innocent. It's not that Jake Gyllenhaal didn't give a strong performance in Presumed Innocent, the Apple TV Plus series adaptation of Scott Turow's best-selling 1987 novel. He did! But given the tough competition, including Kevin Klein, who was viewed as a top contender for Disclaimer, and the fact that Presumed aired over a year ago, some prognosticators, myself included, figured voters might not have the series at top of mind. Now that Gyllenhaal's been nominated, along with Peter Skarsgård, Bill Camp, and Ruth Negga, perhaps Apple TV Plus will try to convince them all to come back for season 2, which has a mostly new cast. Megan Fahey in Sirens. Sorry to the Perfect Couple, Netflix's other trashy, soapy, fun, limited series with A-list stars. While that Nicole Kidman, Liev Schreiber lark was shut out, Sirens, the loopy, dark dramedy starring Julianne Moore as Kiki, a bird-obsessed rich lady, earned 4 nominations. Fahey landed the only acting nod for her funny, fierce, and slightly unhinged turn as the impulsive and determined Devon, who travels to an elite seaside town to save her sister, played by Millie Alcock, from Kiki's clutches. The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Somewhere, Andy Cohen is suppressing a scream. While Bravo's Real Housewives franchise has never managed to break into this category, Hulu's Housewives-esque docu-soap, which follows a group of very messy Mormon wives and mothers, earned a nomination after only being on for 2 seasons. Mom Talk is going to be lit, sans alcohol, of course, tonight. Sharon Horgan for Bad Sisters. On the one hand, Sharon Horgan, who plays Ava Garvey in the Apple TV Plus dramedy about a group of loyal and protective Irish sisters, was nominated for season 1. But with the distinct drop in buzz for season 2, which premiered almost a year ago, it seemed likely that a more high-profile performance, perhaps Melanie Lynskey, a two-time nominee already for Yellow Jackets, would take that final slot in this very competitive category. Jeff Hiller in Somebody Somewhere. It's a bittersweet day for fans of this little HBO comedy that could. While the Stories at the Speed of Life series didn't get a comedy nomination in its final season, nor did star and writer Bridget Everett, voters did have the good sense to honor Jeff Hiller, one of the ensemble's brilliant performers. Hiller's Joel, the kind, sweet, and slyly funny BFF to Everett's Sam, is a character we'll remember forever. And AGG, All Glory to God, Somewhere also earned a writing nomination. Amen! For the snubs category, Steve Martin, Only Murders in the Building. Don't cry for Hulu's Only Murders in the Building. It did receive 8 nominations, including Outstanding Comedy Series and Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series for Martin Short. But as they did in 2023, voters chose to leave Steve Martin off the lead actor in a comedy ballot, leaving Short with 4 nominations to Martin's 3. But what's a little healthy competition between old friends? Squid Game. Look, nobody is saying that the second season of Squid Game reached the same levels of electrifying suspense and horror as the first. But did it deserve a complete shutout? We're pressing our big red X button on that. At the very least, star Lee Jung-jae deserved a nomination for the range he showed in season 2 as Ji-hoon. Once a slightly goofy and naive underdog, transformed into a haunted, grim, but never defeated warrior for justice. La Machina. The Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series category is a tough one. Generally, it only has 5 nominees, and now that limited series are A-list stars' preferred entree into television, the competition for awards attention is fierce. But I'll never understand why voters ignored La Machina, Hulu's thoroughly original, darkly funny, and deeply weird miniseries about an aging boxer, played by Gael Garcia Bernal, caught up in a dangerous conspiracy thanks to his fast-talking, frantically scheming manager, played by Diego Luna. In recent years, the Emmys have embraced Out of the Box series. See 2021's I May Destroy You, 2024's Baby Reindeer, this year's Adolescence in this category. It's just a shame La Machina didn't get its own shot in the ring. Pachinko. Alas, it's not surprising that the Emmys have once again snubbed this rich and riveting multi-generational drama about Korean expats, based on Min Jin Lee's acclaimed 2017 novel. I blame Apple TV Plus, which prefers to pour their considerable promotional resources into uninspired star vehicles like Your Friends and Neighbors and Stick, rather than reminding voters about their literal masterpiece. Come on, guys! Severance was already an Emmy's lock. You could have devoted like a tenth of that show's marketing and 4-year consideration budget to Pachinko just to make it look like you cared. Everybody's Live with John Mulaney. Yes, the tiny, outstanding talk series category is brutal to break into, but if anyone had a shot, it's Mulaney, a 3-time Emmy winner already. Plus, Everybody's Live started as Everybody's in LA, a series that took home an Emmy for Outstanding Picture Editing for Variety Programming in 2024. The comedian also had a shot at Guest Actor in a Comedy for Saturday Night Live, but he struck out there too. And then the last item we have in the snubs category, Black Doves. Shakes Fist at Sky. My kingdom for a dramedy category. This action-packed thriller, starring Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw as bickering spies in London, is too funny to make sense in the drama category and too bloody and action-packed to fit neatly among the comedies. And thus, it got nothing. Ah well, there's always season two. The 77th Primetime Emmy Awards air Sunday, September 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on CBS. That was the biggest snubs and surprises from the 2025 Emmy nominations, and it was by Kristen Baldwin. Before we get to the break, this is going viral, and it might not last more than a few more days. Chris Martin embarrasses couple caught on Coldplay's Kiss Cam. They're having an affair, or they're just very shy. Uh-oh is right. This is by Shania Russell. Camera shy or caught in 4K? The internet is having a field day after Coldplay frontman Chris Martin accidentally put a spotlight on an unwilling couple. During the band's Wednesday night show at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, the Jumbotron camera turned its attention to a cuddling couple in the balcony crowd. "Oh, look at these two," Martin said, but to his surprise, the couple did not appear excited by the spotlight moment and instead scrambled apart. The blonde woman and gray-haired man, once locked in a loving embrace, quickly obscured themselves from the camera's view, with the woman covering her face and turning her back while the man slowly ducked out of frame. Meanwhile, Martin offered live commentary. "All right, come on, you're okay," Martin began, as they continued their panicked efforts to hide. The confused singer exclaimed, "Uh-oh, what?" After a moment, Martin quipped, "Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy." The concert interaction quickly made the rounds once it hit social media, with commenters making plenty of jokes in agreement with Martin's assessment. "There is no plausible reason why they would act that way unless they were having an affair," one user wrote. "Period. Can't convince me otherwise." Another joked, "If I saw my husband cuddled up with his mistress at the Coldplay concert, I would actually be sent to the psych ward." One viewer mused, "They made it so much worse by hiding." Martin certainly isn't the first artist to spark an awkward moment with a kiss cam choice. Last year, Olivia Rodrigo made two siblings wince when she put them in the spotlight at a Sydney concert. "You guys are so cute," the songstress told them in a clip shared on TikTok. "Hey, I have a really cute, fun thing to ask. Would you guys give us a kiss on the guts cam?" The brother was quick to clarify, prompting Rodrigo to exclaim, "She's your sister?" "Yes, never mind. Never mind, scrap that." Coldplay is currently in the midst of their Music of the Spheres tour, which sees the British band performing at venues across the US, Canada, Europe, Asia, and Antarctica. The world tour comes on the heels of their latest release, Moon Music, which marked the group's 10th studio album and featured collaborations with John Hopkins, Lil Sims, Burna Boy, and more. That's the latest viral news. Chris Martin embarrasses couple caught on Coldplay's Kiss Cam. They're having an affair or they're just very shy. That was by Shania Russell. And I might be a bit early here, but I'll mention that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I am reading from their website, which is EW.com. Next, I have an article about Connie Francis, Pretty Little Baby and Who's Sorry Now singer dies at 87. The artist who rose to pop music prominence in the late 1950s and early 60s recently became a viral sensation on TikTok. This is by Mikishana Pierre. Pop star Connie Francis, best known for dominating the charts in the late 1950s and early 60s with hits like Pretty Little Baby and Stupid Cupid, has died at 87. Francis's publicist, Ron Roberts, announced the news of her death on Wednesday in a post on Facebook. While he did not provide a cause of death or details on where Francis died, Robert said his dear friend would have approved that her fans are among the first to learn of this sad news. The singer's death comes almost 2 weeks after she was hospitalized over extreme pain after suffering a fractured hip that caused her to bow out of a planned performance on July 4th. Born Concetta Franco Nero on December 12, 1938, in Newark, New Jersey, Frances began her music career when she was very young. She started playing the accordion at age 3, and by the age of 11, she was appearing on local television variety shows such as Marie Moser's Starlets, and then on Ted Mack's national show, Original Amateur Hour, and Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts. She later secured a 4-year run as one of the child entertainers on Star Time. As she grew up, Frances embarked on a pop career, releasing songs in the 1950s and early 1960s, and becoming the most popular female singer in the U.S. between 1958 and 1964. She sold more than 40 million records and topped the Billboard charts with number one hits like My Heart Has a Mind of Its Own and Don't Break the Heart That Loves You. Other memorable tracks included Stupid Cupid and Who's Sorry Now? Frances officially retired in 2018. While she was absent from the spotlight for many years, Frances recently resurfaced thanks to younger audiences discovering her 1962 song, Pretty Little Baby, on TikTok and incorporating it into a viral trend. It was the soundtrack to more than 600,000 TikTok posts, trended for weeks on the app, and soared to the top spots in Spotify's Viral 50 global and U.S. lists. Thanks to renewed interest in the song, it was re-released as a single in May and climbed up the American charts. To date, it has peaked at number 13 on the Billboard Bubbling Under Hot 100 chart, an extension of its traditional Hot 100 chart, some 62 years after its initial release. This fresh popularity led Frances to create a TikTok page for herself, where she posted videos thanking fans for supporting her music. She also celebrated the newfound attention given to Pretty Little Baby in a post on Facebook. I'm still astounded by the popularity of Pretty Little Baby, Frances wrote before referencing numerous celebrities who've reportedly used the tune in posts. My thanks to Kylie Jenner, Timothy Chalamet, Kim Kardashian, Northwest Kardashian, Kris Jenner, Agnetha Fältskog, Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift, Gracie Lawrence, Shaq O'Neal, Jimmy Fallon, and others for their inclusions in the videos that contributed to the 17 billion plus plays featuring this song. In addition to her music career, Frances acted in movies, including a supporting role in the 1960s comedy Where the Boys Are, and the lead role in 1963's Follow the Boys. She also earned a special Golden Globe in 1964 for her contributions to the recording industry. Frances is survived by son Joey Garzilli, whom she and then-husband Joseph Garzilli adopted. That was Connie Francis, Pretty Little Baby, and Who's Sorry Now singer dies at 87. It was by Mikishana Pierre. Dolly Parton says she's not writing songs following the death of husband Carl Dean. I can't do it. The Grammy winner promises to do it again later. This is by Rachel Shufelt. Dolly Parton has built an extraordinary career on songs inspired by her life, such as Jolene and I Will Always Love You. But the country music star said she's not writing about the March loss of her husband, Carl Dean, just yet. My husband passed away 3 months ago, Parton told host Khloe Kardashian on a recent episode of the Khloe in Wonderland podcast. When you ask me if there's stuff that I've started and haven't finished, several things I've wanted to start, but I can't do it. I will later, but I'm just coming up with such wonderful, beautiful ideas, but I think I won't finish it. I can't do it right now because I got so many other things and I can't afford the luxury of getting that emotional right now. Parton is known to have many projects going on at once. Among other things, the 10-time Grammy winner is currently planning a 6-night residency at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas in December. She also released her latest albums. She's dropped dozens since 1967's Hello, I'm Dolly, in 2022, 2023, and 2024. So, Parton is taking a well-deserved break from creating new material. "I'm just putting that all on hold," she told Kardashian. "That, to me, is like my joy, and it happens to be my job. But it is also my joy, and I love it when I just get a great idea that just comes, and then I think, well, I've got to go put this down somewhere." Parton and Dean were married for more than 58 years when he died at 82. 2 months later, the Steel Magnolias actress told the Associated Press that Dean's death was not unexpected. "He was ill for quite a while, and part of me was at peace that he was at peace and not suffering anymore," Parton said, "but that still doesn't make up for the loss and the loneliness of it." The singer-songwriter said she still feels her late husband's presence. "I just try to go on because I know I have to," she said. Parton dedicated her new song, If You Hadn't Been There, to Dean when it was released just days after he died. We can listen to Parton's full conversation with Kardashian in a link that's at the bottom of the article. That was Dolly Parton says she's not writing songs following the death of husband Carl Dean. "I can't do it." And it was by Rachel Shufeldt. Here's an article that's exclusive to Entertainment Weekly. Cheryl Lee Ralph, Nathan Lane, more on failed auditions, their biggest laughs, being valued, and getting paid more with age. David Alan Greer, Uzo Aduba, Lisa Colon Zayas, and Michael Urie join Ralph and Lane for Entertainment Weekly's awardist Comedy Actors Roundtable. This is by Jared Hall. The minute David Alan Greer walks through the door at Hollywood's NYA Studios, he and Cheryl Lee Ralph start singing. The Dreamgirls alums, Ralph earned a Tony nomination for her work as Dina Jones in the original 1981 Broadway cast, and Greer replaced James, Thunder Early, originator, Clevant Derricks. Take charge of the lobby, and a few publicists, this writer and the Bear star Lisa Colon Zayas, who's standing in a nearby hallway, stop in their tracks, marveling at what we're witnessing. The joyous moment offers just a glimpse into the instant camaraderie that those three, along with Uzo Aduba from The Residents, Nathan Lane from Mid-Century Modern, and Michael Urie from Shrinking, find on Entertainment Weekly's awardist Comedy Actors Roundtable, laughing and cringing about bad audition stories, celebrating long careers, and more. Case in point, after more than 4 decades performing on stage and screens big and small, Greer admits he didn't think he'd still be a working actor. "I did not ever envision, I'm 68, that I would still be working, that I would still be valued, and that I know what I'm doing. Finally, all those years of, oh man, can I do this as an actor? I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to try and do this. I come in not with ego, but with self-confidence that I know how to act, and that's alleviated and freed me," says the actor, who's currently starring on the NBC comedy St. Denis Medical. "I didn't know growing old was this fun. Seriously, I just thought I'd be retired, but I'm reveling in it." They all are, sharing stories about their successful series, looking back on the craziest things they've done for a laugh, and more. We're going to check out the excerpts below from the conversation, and we can watch the full video that's linked in this article. Cheryl Lee Ralph on what continues to motivate her. "The fact that it was a young woman, a young creative writer, artist, who looked at me, recognized my journey and said, come with me on this next walk. That is everything for me, and I so appreciate it, she says of Abbott Elementary creator and star Quinta Brunson casting her to play teacher Barbara Howard. If there is more of that, there is so much to look forward to. I'm going to be Betty White Black, baby, working until the day before I die. Nathan Lane on getting the biggest laugh of his career. I did a play, a Terrence McNally play called Love, Valor, Compassion. And he had written that this character I was playing entered naked, serving drinks. And it is a group of gay men at a country house. And I said, I'm not doing that. There's nothing funny about that at all. And it'd just be upsetting for the audience, for me in particular. So I said, I don't want to do that. But the character is a costume designer. So he could improvise a costume to wear coming out serving drinks. What if I'm in an apron and a big picture hat and sunglasses and sweat socks and high heels, but I'm not wearing anything underneath the apron? So I made this entrance, and it might have been the longest laugh I've ever gotten on stage. They saw me come on, and there was a laugh when they saw the outfit. And then as I went by and saw my ass, the laugh went on for a very long time. And then Stephen Spinella, the great Stephen, was in the scene and he kept trying to cut the laugh off. So I would bend over and serve and stick my ass in his face and the laugh went right back. That's how you steal the scene, Ralph tells him. Uzo Aduba on taking a risk with an Orange is the New Black scene. I think trying things is part of it, she says, answering a question about a time she stepped out of her comfort zone for a role. I had a scene in Orange is the New Black, and it was written as a poem just to be read. I had this idea in my mind of how I should kind of come in and do all these vibes and energies and was a slam poet. I didn't know what I was doing in the TV space, but I had come from another world where you're supposed to try, and they liked it, and they kept it. Lisa Colon Zayas on her reaction to reading Tina's backstory on The Bear. I started crying. A lot. Every time I read it, she admits, because the pilot, we were just having so much fun every time. The energy was up to here, and every time they yelled cut, we just started laughing. And then when I saw the pilot, I was like, wow, this is intense. I was nervous about being so hard. I didn't know at all what was coming, and to have that trust in the writers, they will give me the humanity that she needed. And then I just figured, I got short arms. It'll be funny for me to chop things and reach across the stove. Michael Urey on a shrinking fan helping realize something about his character. It wasn't until actually season 2 had come out that I really figured out who he was, even though I had, I think, been doing it. There's a line in season 2 where I'm being really selfish and Jason Segel's character says, are you really that much of a narcissist that you can't see what this is about? And I say, yes, Jimmy, that's what narcissism is, having the courage to put yourself above others. That's such a funny line. And then it wasn't until somebody came up to me, because a lot of times people come up and say, I'm a therapist and I love your show, which is great. This woman came up and said, I'm a therapist and I love your show and I love your character. He's such a narcissist. And I was like, no, I had no idea he was a narcissist. And then I looked back and I was like, oh my God, of course he is. All this time I've been playing a narcissist. I've had this tunnel vision and I didn't realize it. And of course, that's what a narcissist does too. They don't know that they are one, so it was gratifying to hear it worked. David Alan Greer on his approach to work. It's just a part of my process to strip away everything. Don't come in with a toolbox or a bag of tricks and just kind of let the comedy come organically. With a new character in a new show, you're trying to figure out what is the tone. Trying to find that tone and just let it come. So the older I get, the less I do, and the more I get paid, he says, eliciting laughs from the group as he deadpans to the camera. It's working. For me, one of the scariest things in terms of comedy, it's happened to me a few times in my career. You're so funny. Just say what you want. I need words, man. I get so panicked. Just do your thing. I want a script like everybody else. That was Cheryl Lee Ralph, Nathan Lane, more on failed auditions, their biggest laughs, being valued, and getting paid more with age. It was by Jared Hall, and again, the link to the full roundtable discussion is in the article. Have you been wondering about when The Odyssey is coming out? Here's what they know about Christopher Nolan's starry take on the ancient Greek epic. The director's next film brings Homer's epic to IMAX for the first time. This is by Allison DeGruche. And there are key points here. Christopher Nolan's Odyssey is based on Homer's ancient Greek epic of the same name. Matt Damon leads the cast as Odysseus, joined by Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, John Bernthal, and Lupita Nyong'o. The Odyssey is currently slated to hit theaters on July 17, 2026. Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer won Oscars for Best Picture and Best Director at the 96th Academy Awards, but don't expect the visionary filmmaker to rest on his laurels. In December 2024, Universal Pictures revealed Nolan's next film as The Odyssey, a bold adaptation of Homer's Odyssey, the ancient Greek epic that's inspired numerous film and TV adaptations over the years, including last year's The Return. Described by the studio as a mythic action epic, the film will be shot around the world using brand new IMAX film technology. With 70mm IMAX tickets already selling out a year ahead of its 2026 release date, anticipation couldn't be higher. Here's everything we know so far about The Odyssey, from its cast and plot details to its release date and trailers. Is there a trailer for The Odyssey? Yes, there is a teaser trailer for The Odyssey, but you'll have to catch it on the big screen. As with previous Nolan films, the director shared a first look at The Odyssey more than a year ahead of the July 2026 release. The teaser is currently playing ahead of Jurassic World Rebirth and Superman, and chances are it'll continue showing with other IMAX releases, especially since The Odyssey is the first blockbuster to be shot entirely with IMAX film cameras. The trailer, which runs just over a minute, offers a moody and mysterious glimpse into Nolan's take on Homer's tale. We see flashes of Matt Damon as Odysseus, king of Ithaca, and Tom Holland as his son, Telemachus, as well as a shadowy figure played by John Bernthal. Darkness, Zeus's law, smashed to pieces. A kingdom without a king since my master died, a narrator intones over shots of a stormy ocean and waves crashing along the shoreline. He knew it was an unwinnable war, and then, somehow, he won it. The camera then lingers on two shots of the story's infamous Trojan horse, one casting a long shadow on the beach and the other partially submerged in water. From there, the teaser cuts to a tense exchange between Holland's Telemachus and Bernthal's character. "I know nothing of Odysseus, not since Troy," Bernthal says as a storm looms. Telemachus replies, "I have to find out what happened to my father. When did you last see him?" Joined by other characters, including one played by Lupita Nyong'o, they sit by a fire as Bernthal begins questioning the group. "Interested in rumor, huh? Gossip. Who has a story about Odysseus, huh?" Bernthal shouts. "You? You? You have a story? Some say he's rich. Some say he's poor. Some say he perished. Some say he's imprisoned. What say you?
Imprisoned? Telemachus asks.
What kind of prison? Good old man like that, Bernthal says. We see fleeting shots of Greek soldiers, caverns, and finally Odysseus himself drifting at sea on a piece of wood. What is the Odyssey about?
Based on Homer's legendary epic, one of the oldest surviving stories in literature, Nolan's The Odyssey tells the story of Odysseus, the king of Ithaca, as he fights to return home after the Trojan War. What could have been a quick journey turns into a 10-year expedition filled with mythical creatures and near-death experiences involving a cyclops, the mellifluous sirens, and the witch goddess Circe, as played by Charlize Theron. Back in Ithaca, Odysseus is presumed dead. His wife Penelope is fending off a horde of obnoxious suitors trying to take his throne, while their son, Telemachus, grows up wondering if his father is still alive. When is The Odyssey coming out? The Odyssey will sail into theaters on July 17, 2026. Who's in The Odyssey cast? A better question might be, who isn't in The Odyssey cast? As mentioned, the film features Damon, Holland, Bernthal, and Nyong'o in major roles. In a recent interview with GQ, Holland called the experience the job of a lifetime and hinted that audiences are in for something truly unique. The best experience I've had on the film set. Incredible, he said. It was exciting. It was different. And I think the movie is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. He went on to praise Nolan and his wife, producer Emma Thomas, saying, "To get a front row seat to that and to be part of the process and to collaborate with a true master of his craft and learn from him was the best experience I've ever had." Holland also shared what it meant to work alongside his heroes, including Damon and Anne Hathaway. "To share scenes with them, to learn from them, to become friends with them. I couldn't have asked for a better job," he said, "and I'm so proud of the work I've done. I came to work every day with a real sense of purpose and a point to prove, and I'm so grateful for Chris to have given me that opportunity." Like Oppenheimer, The Odyssey features a massive A-list ensemble packed with Oscar winners and box office titans. Here's just a taste of that cast. Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, Charlize Theron, Benny Safdie, John Leguizamo, Elliot Page, Mia Goth, Himesh Patel, Corey Watkins, Bill Irwin, Samantha Morton, Josh Stewart, Ryan Hurst, and Logan Marshall Green. That was When Is the Odyssey Coming Out? What we know about Christopher Nolan's starry take on the ancient Greek epic, and it was by Allison DeGruche. And as promised, I will wrap up this show with a reading of the 2025 Emmy nominations. This is the full list, and this is no disrespect in particular to reality shows and writers, but I may not get to those complete categories. The full list is here in the article. This is the 2025 Emmy nominations. See the full list. The White Lotus, The Penguin, Severance, and The Studio were among the most nominated shows. This is by Emlyn Travis. Praise Keir! The 2025 Emmys nominations have arrived. Running Point actress Brenda Song and What We Do in the Shadows alum Harvey Guillen announced this year's contenders for the 77th Annual Emmy Awards, and Severance was clearly a cut ahead of its fellow nominees. The Apple TV Plus thriller racked up a whopping 27 nominations, the most of any drama or comedy series, with nods for its outstanding writing, directing, and acting from stars like Adam Scott, Trammell Tillman, and Britt Lower. Meanwhile, the Penguin cast better prepare their best tuxedos because the HBO limited series earned an impressive 24 total nominations, trailing closely behind the Batman spinoff and surely lugging their suitcases along with them, with 23 nods, was The White Lotus Season 3, with many of the Mike White creative drama's star-studded cast, Parker Posey, Walton Goggins, Carrie Coon, Sam Rockwell, and Amy Lou Wood, earning spots in the Outstanding Support Actor and Actress categories. And over on the comedy side, Seth Rogen's The Studio also confirmed it had a verified blockbuster hit on its hands with 23 nominations. In order to be considered for this year's ceremony, all television shows, limited series, or made-for-TV film entries must have been released nationally between June 1, 2024 and May 31, 2025. That time span marks the return of several comedy category darlings like The Bear, Abbott Elementary, Only Murders in the Building, and Hacks, as well as dramas like The White Lotus, Severance, and The Last of Us. However, newcomers like Netflix's romantic Nobody Wants This, which earned 3 nominations, and the Noah Wiley-led medical drama The Pitt, which received 13, have the potential to give the legacy shows a real run for their money. The Emmys are voted upon every year by the members of the Television Academy. The final round of voting will end on August 27th, just over 2 weeks before the ceremony, hosted by comedian Nate Bargatze, airs Sunday, September 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Time on CBS. Here's the full list of nominees as I'm able to get them into the time we have remaining. For Outstanding Drama Series, we have Andor, The Diplomat, The Last of Us, Paradise, The Pitt, Severance, Slow Horses, and The White Lotus. For Outstanding Comedy Series, Abbott Elementary, The Bear, Hacks, Nobody Wants This, Only Murders in the Building, Shrinking, The Studio, and What We Do in the Shadows. For Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series, we have Sterling K. Brown for Paradise, Gary Oldman for Slow Horses, Pedro Pascal for The Last of Us, Adam Scott for Severance, and Noah Wiley for The Pitt. For Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, Kathy Bates in Matlock, Sharon Horgan for Bad Sisters, Britt Lower for Severance, Bella Ramsey for The Last of Us, and Carrie Russell for The Diplomat. For Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series, Adam Brody for Nobody Wants This, Seth Rogen for The Studio, Jason Segel for Shrinking, Martin Short for Only Murders in the Building, and Jeremy Allen White for The Bear. For Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series, we have Uzo Aduba for The Residence, Kristen Bell for Nobody Wants This, Quinta Brunson for Abbott Elementary, Ayo Edebiri for The Bear, and Jean Smart for Hacks. For Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series, there's Zach Cherry for Severance. We also have Trammell Tillman and John Turturro for Severance. For The White Lotus, there are 3 people, Walton Goggins, Jason Isaacs, and Sam Rockwell, and James Marsden for Paradise. For Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, Severance has Patricia Arquette. In The White Lotus, there are 4. It's Carrie Coon, Parker Posey, Natasha Rothwell, and Amy Lou Wood. And then there's also Julianne Nicholson for Paradise. For Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series, Ike Barinholtz for The Studio. There's Colman Domingo for The Four Seasons. Shrinking has 2 nominees, Harrison Ford and Michael Urie. Jeff Hiller for Somebody Somewhere. Yvonne Moss-Bachrach for The Bear and Bowen Yang for Saturday Night Live. For Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series, we have Liza Colon-Zayas for The Bear, Hannah Einbinder for Hacks, 2 people from The Studio, that's Catherine Hahn and Catherine O'Hara, Janelle James and Cheryl Lee Ralph, both for Abbott Elementary, and Jessica Williams for Shrinking. For Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series, there's Adolescence, Black Mirror, Dying for Sex, Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story, and The Penguin. For Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie, Colin Farrell for The Penguin, Stephen Graham for Adolescence, Jake Gyllenhaal for Presumed Innocent, Brian Tyree Henry for Dope Thief, and Cooper Koch for Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story. For Outstanding Lead Actress in a Limited Series or Movie, there's Cate Blanchett for Disclaimer, Megan Fahey for Sirens, Rashida Jones for Black Mirror, Kristen Milioti for The Penguin, and Michelle Williams for Dying for Sex. For Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Limited Series or Movie, there's Javier Bardem for Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story, Bill Camp for Presumed Innocent, Owen Cooper for Adolescence, Rob Delaney for Dying for Sex, Peter Skarsgård for Presumed Innocent also, and Ashley Walters for Adolescence also. For Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series or Movie, we have two people for Adolescence. There's Erin Doherty and Christine Trimarco. For Presumed Innocent, there's Ruth Negga. The Penguin has Deirdre O'Connell. Chloe Sevigny was in Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story, and Jenny Slate in Dying for Sex. For Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series, we have one person from The Bear and everybody else is from the studio. There's Jon Bernthal from The Bear, and then from the studio, Bryan Cranston, Dave Franco, Ron Howard, Anthony Mackie, and Martin Scorsese. Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama Series, there is Giancarlo Esposito for The Boys, Scott Glenn from The White Lotus, Sean Hadassi from The Pitt, two from The Last of Us, that's Joe Padaligiano and Jeffrey Wright, and Forrest Whitaker for Andor. For Outstanding Guest Actress in a Comedy Series, there are two people from The Bear, Olivia Colman and Jamie Lee Curtis, Cynthia Erivo from Poker Face, two from Hacks, that's Robbie Hoffman and Julianne Nicholson, and from the studio, Zoe Kravitz. And that runs us out of time on this list. Thank you all for listening. Do come back to this list online if you want the rest of the nominees. It's a long list, but thank you for listening this week. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This has been Entertainment Weekly, and I've been reading from their website, which is EW.com. Please come back next week. I'm sure we'll have a couple more articles from the Emmys, but at least you've got a good idea of what you can be watching right now before the awards come out. Until next time, goodbye.